CliffCentral.com. CliffCentral.com. I hope you're off to an awesome start for your day this morning. And we are here to tell you what's going on in the world, or hopefully to introduce you to some of the things that are happening in politics, in the economy, in society, and to deliver you some interesting commentary from Canton Pillay and Pumi Mashiho, who are both standing by. And this morning also from Ivo Fechter, who, of course, is well known to our audience as well. Nice to see you, Ivo. Good to see you, Canton. And Pumelele, welcome back. You can all
and
hear
me. Silence descended upon the house.
Good morning, Gareth. Nice to be with you.
I was going to say, did I say something to offend you?
Probably, but not yet.
All right, guys, there's so much to talk about. The Burning Platform is brought to you every week by Nando's, and this morning is either going to be lemon and herb, or it's going to be hot, or it's going to be very hot.
And has anyone seen that meme of Tito as a chicken? I strongly think that we should be speaking to Nando's creative agency to try and do something with it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're on it already. Those guys don't waste any time. So let's talk about Tito since you brought him up. Tito made a medium-term budget policy statement yesterday. I have to tell you, all it seems to me, and I've read the headlines off of it, and it seems to me he's just kicking the can down the road. Isn't that what a medium-term, you know, budget policy statement is, though?
Well, technically the budget policy statement is not meant to make new policy. It's just meant to make tweaks to the existing policy. So, right. For example, you won't have a scenario where you're having a drastic increase in taxation, as an example, because, you know, the logistics of doing things like making changes to the tax system in midterm is actually quite formidable. So what tends to happen is that you'll have tweaks in terms of how money has already been allocated to spending. And that's pretty much all that happens. But then you also have to put forward projections in terms of where you think things are going to be going and that type of stuff. So at that level, anyone who's actually expecting anything drastic to come out of this, well, that's not what this speech is meant to be all about. But the significant thing for me is that in the middle of his speech, he decides to go off script and plays the race card.
Where was that? What did he say?
Well, he said that he suddenly stopped and said, by the way, Tigerberg Hospital still has a white section and a black section, and it's completely unacceptable in this day and age. Now, whether that is the case or not, he did go off script, but more fundamentally, you're talking about Tigerberg Hospital having a white section and a black section that has not been apparently fixed. I don't know, what does he want to demolish the building and put up a new hospital? But he did not say anything about the fact that our hospitals up here in Gauteng are literally collapsing.
But is this true for Tigerberg Hospital? Because it would seem to me like everybody in the world knows that that kind of thing at the moment is going to cause untold pain and opprobrium for you. Why would anyone leave a sign up that said blacks or whites, or it's just asking for trouble?
Well, there was an immediate response from the Western Cape MEC for Health, who gave him a resounding smackdown, saying, you know, this is absolutely outrageous, and I demand an apology. Now, an apology will not be forthcoming. We know this. But certainly, you know, whatever hopes I had that Tito might, to some extent, be slightly different from the rest of the coterie in the ANC. You know, there've been a lot of people who've been kind of banging on this entire narrative that, no, not to worry, Tito is standing as a gatekeeper, and ultimately he's going to put in place checks and balance. And no, people, this is a crock. Okay, it is now evidently clear that he is cut from exactly the same cloth, notwithstanding his Goldman Sachs training.
I want to say that you and Pumi have disabused me of any notions that Cyril Ramaphosa is a reasonable, sane individual who we can trust in. So now you're telling me I can't even trust Tito.
I'm saying I don't trust Tito. Gareth, I would never tell you who to trust. I'm saying that I do not trust him.
Well, I don't know. That's only the one of the few reasons I listen to the Burning Platform with you guys every week is to find out who to trust. before we get to Ivo, did you have any thoughts on the medium-term budget policy statement?
But I told you guys last week that we're not going to get anything exciting out of Tito. We're not going to get anything different. The man is busy, guys, cooking pilchard with garlic. And there's no way that he's going to, people like to think that he's going to come out differently. And is, as Canton's been saying, that he's going to be some kind of gatekeeper. But that's not who he is. He didn't even want the job to begin with. And he categorically said this on his social media months before he was given the job. So why would you think that his mind is in the game?
Okay. You're really shattering all my dreams.
Sorry.
Let's go to Ivo. Ivo Pachter, it's nice to see you, my friend. How are things going? And what do you have to say about Tito and the medium-term budget policy statement?
I've just got to point out, Ivo, for people who are just listening and not able to watch at the same time, Ivo is extremely warmly dressed, which leads me to believe that things are kind of cold down in the Western Cape right now, Ivo.
Or do you have COVID?
It's a chilly morning. No, I don't have COVID. Right. And if I did, I'd be in good hands. My wife has been a COVID nurse throughout this whole pandemic. So,
oh, wow.
I'll be in very good hands. No,
you haven't been tested, Ivo. How do you know that you have COVID or not?
No, I haven't been tested, so I may very well be asymptomatic and causing a plague, but I'm not going to bring that to the attention of the authorities, lest they ship me off to Mossel Bay to an isolation center.
Okay.
Tito, all right. Firstly, I did say right from the start when he was first appointed, I said the guy is a socialist through and through. Right, that's where his heart is. Right, don't trust this guy. He's actually surprised me with a few of the things he said, over the years. Oh, we got to control spending, blah, blah, blah. You know, we can't let the looting carry on and so on. You know, he's said a few of the right things. But I did warn right from the start, don't trust him. What he did with that hospital thing, frankly, that is dangerous. And I really think he needs to be brought up on this, because what's going to happen with this sort of thing? If you think that there's a problem at Tigerberg Hospital, and there very well may be. I mean, I haven't been there in, I don't know, 20 years, so I don't know. If there is a problem, then quietly go and deal with it. You know, it's not as if you can't go there and say to the hospital administrator, listen, this and this and this is unacceptable, and we expect to change within a month and fix it. Now he makes a public statement like this, and what do you think is going to happen? What, the EFF is going to just take this and ignore this? Or are they going to pull a Clicks on Tigerberg Hospital, and riot and break the doors and break things and stop people from getting healthcare and endanger people's lives? This is an absolutely reckless act on the part of Mbuweni. I was really surprised by that. I thought that was really out of line. So, there's that. Can I rant?
Yes,
can I rant?
Of course you can. Rant. That's the whole point of this show.
This medium-term budget policy statement was nothing more than Mbuweni reneging on his promises and admitting that there is nothing he can do to control the government. Right? He promised us earlier in the year that he would keep our national debt to below 87% of GDP. Now he says it's going to stabilize at 95% of GDP. That's a big gap. Right? He said the economy will contract by 7.2% in 2020, and then he spitballed a few positive numbers for the next 3 years to make us feel better. But that sounds like recovery, but it isn't. Right? That growth is going to come off a much lower base. Right? And by the end of those 3 years, we still won't be back at 2019 GDP levels. Right? So we'll still have a problem by 2024. On the public wage bill, he says he cannot usurp the powers of the Minister for Public Service and Administration, Minister Senzo Mchunu. He can't do anything about the government wage bill himself. So he says, bring it down, but I can't do anything about it. You know, it's up to Minister Mchunu. Then the DA told him that he capitulated on bailing out SAA, and he got very upset, and he said that they were out of order, right? But the thing is, he did say that SAA wouldn't be bailed out again. You know, he said that at the beginning of the year. Now he says the Treasury is just carrying out a decision by the national government to bail out SAA. Well, then he has capitulated, and he's admitting that he does not have the power to stop governments splurging billions on whatever takes their fancy, isn't it? You know, if he can't even stop the 10 billion to SAA, what can he stop? What control does he have over government and over government spending? You know, he told the DA they must stop this nonsense.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the nonsense that needs to stop is throwing billions of rands we cannot afford down black holes like SAA.
Right.
You know, what with the travel bans and everything, I thought this was the perfect opportunity to let the private sector rebuild the airline industry, you know, without the burden of being bullied and undercut by a public carrier that gets bailouts every year, right? Hell, we don't need the government to fly rich people around while poor people have no jobs, no houses and food. You know, the government's got other things to worry about.
I think all of us have been making that particular point about AA in this space for the past 3 or 4 years, I should say.
It's the absolute logical thing. And the thing is, Mboweni used to agree. Mboweni said the same thing a year ago, or less than a year ago. Right, so
maybe what we need to realize. So, Ivo, I think, I mean, a lot of the stuff that, as you say, you're ranting about, I think one of the things that we all need to realize is exactly how the system of government works. So if Tito Mboweni comes on and makes particular promises, it's important that we understand the realm of reality for him to be able to deliver on those promises. This is what politicians do. They categorically make promises across all sorts of lines. And the reality of it is that even as he made those promises, he did not have it within his power to make those changes. Yeah. So he really does not have the scope to bully a Senzo Mkhumo or to tell Cyril Ramaphosa what to do. The executive wing still has all this power. And the way that it gets cascaded down, it is simply the way that our government is ordered. Because he says he's going to do it doesn't mean that he has the power to do it. And that's what we have to realize from the jump, that even as he says that, we must be realistic about the fact that he doesn't have the power to do that.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. You know, everyone got so optimistic and said, look, Mboweni's saying all the right things. He says that we must avoid a debt crisis and we must cut government spending and, you know, we must fix SARS and we must do all these cool things. And as if any of what he says makes any difference whatsoever. It doesn't.
Because the reality that we have to accept is that the person who does have the opportunity to make these kinds of changes is unwilling to make decisions. We have a president that is unwilling to make decisions. He's either asleep at the wheel or he's not even there.
Right. He thinks he might have COVID. He's disappearing for a few days. Now, Lauren says, she's listening to us. She says, I work at Tigerberg Hospital, and this whole story is false. It's all fake.
I have no doubt that that's the case.
I would tend to agree, and
the guy was off script on this. More to the point, here's what I think where it should actually happen. I think that the MEC in the Western Cape should actually sue Mboweni for defamation in his personal capacity, simply because of the fact that this has cast a slur upon, I mean, right now in this country, the slur of racism is something that will actually destroy you completely. And I think it's about time that people actually became accountable by paying for it out of their pocketbooks. And the minister has used his platform, to essentially besmirch these people.
The concern I have, and I've said this before, I've been saying it since 2015 already, when Bell Pottinger was fermenting all kinds of racial divisiveness. I've said for the longest time, every time that someone cries wolf racism and it isn't actually racism, it damages the cause of people who are trying to stand against racism in real ways. Like, you water it down, you make it weak and you make it unimportant. And it continues to be a problem worldwide. Look, the demand may outstrip the supply in some places, like where Jussie Smollett had to make up his own race incident. But let's be perfectly frank about this. Every single time that someone alleges racism and there isn't any, it damages the cause against real racists. And I think that this is extremely pervasive and very, very dangerous in the long term, because soon everyone's going to be called a racist, and soon every institution is going to be called systemically racist, and then eventually nothing will be worth keeping.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you there. Look, I'll tell you what probably does happen, and I don't know what the cause is, why Mboweni made this particular comment about this particular hospital. But you know, my wife works in a hospital. She does COVID testing and so on. What does happen is that there are entitled white people who rock up to a hospital and aren't very inclined to queue. Right. They try to go and they try and make arrangements. Oh, you know, I've got to get back to work. So could you please deal with me very quickly when there's an hour long queue?
Very important.
And I'm sure that happens. Perhaps he has seen that, you know, that there are some people that are entitled and make demands. Then you've got the problem that what happens with how these queues get managed, right, is that they aren't managed first come, first serve. They are managed based on what someone's symptoms are, right? So you look at the most serious people first. You know, people who need to go into operations, they need to be treated quickly. People that can't breathe or their oxygen sats are low, you know, they need to be treated quickly. So they get jumped to the front of the queue. You know, if that happens to happen to a white 70-year-old, right, when there's a bunch of 40-year-olds sitting in the queue, perhaps that could be interpreted as racism when it actually isn't. Sure. So, you know, I'm sure he saw something there, but I'm not sure that he saw what he thinks he saw. And to then say that Tigerberg has a black and white section is absolutely outrageous. That's, you know, that cannot possibly be true.
And let's also be very clear, guys, that a lot of these public hospitals also have separate facilities that get provided for people who are basically there to make use of the public service portion, or those who are on medical aid actually get to jump the queue. Because they're paying for it.
I don't believe that's true.
It's certainly the case up here in the former Joburg General at Charlotte Makleke, which is where, when, Mantamazana Mshabalala Simang was getting her treatment sorted out, that was paid for by medical aid, but it happened to be at a public healthcare facility.
So what so they have a two-tier system that allows for non-paying and fee-paying. That's what we have here. But I just want to say, one of the things that does happen with cries of racism is that it's a distraction. It's a distraction from what should be spoken about. Right now, as we're having this conversation going around and around as to who pays for what and who gets to jump the queue, what we're not talking about is we're not talking about what the real problems are. We're not talking about what the real issues are. Racism is a problem in some places, but most South Africans are actually encountering other Black people, whether it's in the public service, whether it's in the service delivery. What we are encountering as Black people with this government is we are encountering other Black people treating us badly. That's what it is. And for as long as we can distract ourselves by saying it's a racist issue, it's a racism issue, then we're not dealing with the real problem, because we've got this unseen enemy over here that we're trying to fight. But the reality of it is that he had no ideas. He has no ideas to share with us. He does not have the power that a lot of people. He does not have the power that a lot of people seem to have imbued on him. And he has a boss who's unwilling to make hard decisions. Yeah. That's the reality.
But he does have ideas. He does have ideas. I heard them last night, yesterday afternoon. He said he can't stop ministers from blowing their budgets, but there's 177 public infrastructure projects, 12 new harbors. I mean, you know, the whole year, right, throughout this lockdown, right, when I didn't have cigarettes and I couldn't drink booze and so on, the whole thing I was thinking was, if only we had 12 more harbors, everything would be okay. You know?
Well, guys,
it's like he's playing SimCity. He thinks, oh, you built some infrastructure here and there, boom, 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 and it'll magically start making money. It's like he's playing some computer game.
Now, I would love if he actually had played SimCity. Perhaps we would have some infrastructure plan. But I don't think he's even played a strategy game like that, because all of this. Listen, I had a really interesting conversation with a friend of mine on Monday, who I do regard as one of the people who very seldom gets things wrong. And he said to me, you've got to realize three things about the ANC. So I'm going to repeat them here because I think they're all true. Number one, the ANC is a criminal organization. But number two, they're extremely incompetent at being a criminal organization. So they like the mafia, but they never really get things right. They're like Keystone Cops. They're falling over their own feet. They're sliding into the river. They knock things over. They break their own creations, all that kind of thing, right? So those two. And the third thing he said is that you've got to be very honest about the fact that most of the people who are running this country at the moment are actually quite stupid. And this is something we don't get to talk about very much. But, you know, there are governments all over the world that are stupid, and politics seems like a lamp to the moths of stupidity, because lots of people, stupid people, go into politics. And I know this is an old, tired story for Canton and Pumi, because they don't particularly like politicians. And I suspect, Ivo, you don't either. But we've got to admit that there's a very low level of general strategic intelligence inside the ANC. A lot of the smart people were flushed out during the Mbeki era. And you know, Jacob Zuma took great joy in saying that he'd got the clever blacks out of the way. I think we've got to be very frank and honest about that, because when you accept those three things about the ANC, then nothing's a surprise anymore. And you don't have to be frustrated the whole time. And you can operate within the parameters that you would set for yourself if you knew you were dealing with incompetent, criminal, and stupid people. Right?
Well, let's talk about a bigger level of stupidity, shall we? And this comes back to the question of whether the Tigerberg Hospital thing was a distraction. What if I give you another scenario? That, in fact, SAA is a distraction.
Tell me.
Well, let's put this in perspective, all right? And again, if we drill down into what Tito was saying in terms of his budget speech, currently government is borrowing at a rate of 2.1 billion per day. So now, if we can keep that in perspective, all right, SAA in terms of 2.1 billion per day is about 4 days worth of expenditure in terms of debt. Now, the entire media landscape in our country right now is saying SAA, 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 and they are not stopping to actually think about the additional 759, I think it would be 759 billion rand, that we are borrowing to stay afloat.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
So, and also, I will just want to make one final point on this, that the SAA allocation of 10.5 billion is in addition to 16.4 billion that was allocated in the February budget. Okay, yeah. So in fact, the SAA amount is bigger. But everyone is turning around and saying SAA, and that becomes the focus. Guys, the focus has to be on the fact that the public sector wage bill grew by average 7.2% a year consistently over the past 5 years.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. And all of us who are in the private sector, we've taken a haircut in terms of our earnings. If our earnings have been able to keep pace with inflation, we've been, you know, celebrating, because that's kind of been running to stand still, but not counting the fact that they've been all of these hidden taxes that keep popping up. Ivo, you know, the tobacco tax as an example, the ongoing increase in alcohol related taxes, all of that.
Sugar tax, exactly.
Yeah. But 7.2% per year on average for the public sector wage bill, that is the elephant in the room. And we need to forget about SAA. SAA doesn't count. SAA, as I've said, less than 5 days worth of borrowing expenditure at our current levels. Let's focus on the big picture.
Look, SAA is symbolic. You know, it's symbolic of the the fact that, you know, SAA, I mean, this doesn't it only get this 10 billion, but it gets 5 or 10 billion every single year, you know. It is it's symbolic of the failing SOEs that keep getting bailed out. You know, and it's, and SOEs that advertise and say, oh, please use less of our product, you know, because we can't give you enough. And then when you do, because they give you blackouts or whatever, and you do use less of their product because you're forced to, they say, oh, but hold, now we're losing revenue. So now we need to charge you for the electricity that you didn't use. So right. It's SAA is just symbolic of these failing SOEs, and pretty much all the SOEs without exception, are failing in this sense. So, you know, it's not entirely a distraction. It's more that it's such an obvious symbol. I've lost my train of thought now.
That's what happens when you rant, Ivo.
I was going to say something. So
Ivo, you were talking about the fact that it's entirely that SAA is a symbol of the larger malfeasance.
Yes, but I was going to talk about something else, and it was going to be funny and intelligent. It was going to be awesome, but I've lost it.
Well, you're reminding me of that story, Ivo. That I had a psychic girlfriend, but she left me before I could meet her.
Yes, clever girl. Look, it is a distraction from some of what you know. He says things like, "We need a mindset change." You know, right. He said we used to boast about the fact that we were one of the richest countries in Africa. Now, I'm not sure how making peace with the fact that we are no longer a rich country is going to make anything better. You know, as if we became poor by some sort of divine fate or you know, a natural disaster we couldn't have predicted. You know, no, the government needs a mindset change. The government got us into this mess.
Yeah.
So I do want to say, though, if you're angry about SAA and its bailouts, and you're angry about the amount of money we are borrowing per day, as Canton has just told us, next week is going to be a very interesting week at the Zondo Commission for all of y'all. If you're not yet angry, watch next week and you might just get angry.
Let me just at this point say that Pumi is a massive, massive fan. She is the most dedicated viewer of the Zondo Commission. She's been watching it from day one. It is her favorite show. And thank God for it, because she comes here then and she gives me the praise-y version. So what's happening at the Zondo Commission next week that we need to be excited about?
Next week's revelations are going to be quite fun, because there are a couple of people coming in talking about the shenanigans that did happen at SAA and who the various individuals who benefited from the SAA expenditure was. So it's just, you see, for me, as you know, everybody on the show who listens all the time, for me, the most important part of what's happening in our country is really about empowering ourselves with the knowledge. We have to know. We have to know what the lay of the land is. We have to know what has happened, and we have to know why these decisions have come to this place, because it gives you the opportunity to make the best decision for yourself going into the elections. We've got elections coming up in August next year, and we've got in 2024 another opportunity to do something about how our country is run. And for as long as we're only just listening to one or two people and what their opinions are, and thinking that the answers lie in some kind of strong man that will come in and save us, we're not going to make different decisions. We're not going to make different decisions. So the important thing is really empowering ourselves with the knowledge, understand what has happened and where it all went wrong, and why those decisions have got us to where we are, so that you make a different decision when voting time comes.
Right. Well, there's some solid advice.
Just saying.
All right. Can we just talk about a few specifics here? As William Kieser has been back on the rampage, he says the absence of a formal state of disaster makes it impossible for him to manage COVID. And Kwasa Sana Dlamini Zuma keeps on renewing the state of disaster quietly in the dead of night. It's now been moved. I think it continues until Sunday. And then there are various court actions that are going to be brought against her if she tries to continue it again. But the reason that they like this state of disaster, and correct me where I'm wrong here, Ivo, is that it allows government, especially the executive branch of government, extraordinary powers to do what they want without Parliament's say-so, without any other permissions that they would usually require to make these decisions. So we should have an end to this at some point, right? Or what kind of state do we live in?
Well, that's exactly the point. I mean, the state of disaster is already very alarming. You know, when this whole thing started and they only declared a state of disaster and not a state of emergency. You know, we know the state of emergency would actually suspend parts of the Constitution. But a state of disaster doesn't. And I was absolutely astonished by how many liberties they could take away from people without suspending the Constitution. They could lock us up in their house, in our houses, and tell us not to go to work. You know, and tell us go out only if you're hungry and you need food, or you need medical care. It was, you know, shut down most of the economy. It was absolutely astonishing how draconian the powers were, under the Disaster Management Act, without even suspending the Constitution. I thought the Constitution was there to protect our rights, but I have been disabused of that notion.
But I know the fundamental issue out there is that the courts, by refusing to move swiftly on it, actually became complicit in it. Because,
yes, they were.
Yeah.
They were completely unwilling to second-guess the government on any of the COVID regulations. It was, you know, they were totally supine. That's another thing I got disabused of. You know, I used to think that the courts were kind of still on our side and you could still rely on the courts to second-guess what the legislature and the executive were doing. And keep them in line. They absolutely haven't done so during the lockdown period. You know, the DA went to court and challenged a bunch of things, challenged the constitutionality of a bunch of these regulations. Court said, sorry, not interested in even hearing it. You know, come back next year. Maybe we'll have the time to have a chinwag about it. yeah.
The issue of that constitution, again, you know, a lot of people, and I would hazard a guess that says possibly most of our MPs and a lot of our ministers have not even read the most basic part of our constitution and what it allows and does not allow. So I don't doubt it for a second that even as we're all parading this constitution and our constitutional rights, that nobody, even the people who are supposed to protect those constitutional rights, actually understand what those constitutional rights are.
But guys, in our defense, I must say, we are no more or no less stupid than people in other parts of the world, really.
Mm-hmm. No. This happens everywhere.
I always say thank God for the townships, because the townships in this country put the middle finger up nice and loud and clear to government and said, we're carrying on with our business. Largely, yeah, in most of the informal settlements in South Africa, people carried on with their lives. They paid no heed to the government. And it was a great survival strategy. Because
that was one of my big arguments against lockdown in the first place. I said, how are you going to lock down the townships? You can't.
Well, they didn't. So, and it proved that all those Karens in the suburbs who were so careful to follow Zweli Mkhize and Cyril Ramaphosa's rules and sanitize and mask and all that stuff, those people saved not a single life. And the people in the township may have inadvertently, by carrying on with their lives and living and trying to do normal commercial activity just to survive, they may have created a state of at least some kind of herd immunity in those communities, which may spread and save the rest of us. It could explain why our death rate is so low. Obviously, the young population in this country has a part to play in that, as does our climate. But all of these things together, these factors together, have resulted in a tremendously low death rate in Africa. And in South Africa, we've done pretty damn well. And it's not because of lockdowns.
No, it's not because of lockdown. It's a number of other possible reasons, some of which actually still need to be scientifically investigated. I do think that sensible precautions are reasonable, and I'm in favor of masks and sanitizing and keeping social distance. I think that's a reasonable, and we know it works. It does slow down. It slows down epidemics. And that's very important, especially at near the peak and so on, where you don't want your healthcare systems overwhelmed. Our healthcare systems are pretty shit to begin with. So, you know, we don't want to put them under too much pressure. I think it works. I still wear a mask. I still sanitize regularly. You know, just it's a sensible precaution. That's not what's killing our economy. That's not what's killing the country. But yeah, a lot of the other rules, you know, exercising between 6 and 9 in the morning. You remember that one?
Yeah.
Well, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Well, yes. not buying alcohol on weekends because, you know, the virus is clearly watching. Yes.
Yeah. Guys, no, it's.
Can we talk about Cyril's proposed 500 billion rand fiscal relief package? And it's part of what Tito's meant to put into action here.
How much of it actually exists?
Well, I don't know. This is what I need to ask you.
Because, I mean, if you look at the 200 billion of that, which goes to the credit guarantee scheme, you know, it's supposed to be guaranteeing banks somehow that businesses who borrow from them will pay it back. Well, A, those loans come with a fee that is paid to the government. So they're actually not competitive. So nobody's picking up those loans. I think only about 10 billion or so has been lent out under the 200 billion loan guarantee scheme. That's not money that's lying around that's being used here. Mm. You know, so 190 billion of that 500 billion, right, is already doesn't exist. It's not there, right? So now we've got to talk about 310 billion, right? And there's, you know, a few projects and so on, but they're all pretty useless things. They sort of brag about, oh, we supported almost half the population during the lockdown period with various grants and whatnot. How can you brag about the fact that half of your country lives off handouts from the state? You know, so, how can you possibly think that the economy can carry on that way?
You know, earlier this morning when we were speaking to Sean about the crypto, he made the point of how much money is printed and is currently in circulation. This is definitely one of the things that you see with a lot of the kind of the notations that we get from our Cyril. So all of these billions that I talked about, it's a ledger input, right?
Yeah.
Someone is like with a little sharp pencil, ledger input. Mm-hmm. And what it doesn't translate to, it's simply shifting around these debts. And that's why a lot of the people, when he came out with his talk and his stimulus packages and his 200 billions that he's raised from the private sector, all that it is there's nothing new there. All that it is it's shifting the numbers around on their spreadsheets. You know, we were speaking earlier about the statue, the Oar Tambo statue, and the fact that it cost 30 million, which is actual money that was given to Dali Tambo, right? for the statue. And the fact that if that 13 million were to have been given out in little envelopes of 350 rand, which is what the government did send out to some people, that some 37,000 people who would have received their little 350 rands worth of COVID relief. But all of those things, guys, all of those things are just shifting the numbers around on a spreadsheet. The people who do actually get that kind of relief, so the small businesses that are looking for that relief, don't have the infrastructure to look for it. They don't have what the banks are looking for. So they get these amounts of money and these COVID reliefs and the SARS relief. In order to access it, you have to access it through a very complex and very tiring system of administrative tasks that involve getting a thing from the police station, getting an affidavit from the police station, and getting 3 months bank statements, and getting this and getting that. And so the people who really do need that kind of relief don't have the administrative support that they require in order to access it. And the big businesses who don't need it have got tons of administrators, yes, tons of accountants, tons of lawyers in place to be able to get into that system. So when they say that they have actually taken out 10 billion rand in this, I know this as a small business trying to get SARS to give me a 3-month window within which to pay through the VAT. Oh my God, what a nightmare. That's what you're dealing with.
All right, but you bring up SARS. So let's just talk about SARS for a second, because one of the things Tito indicated is that the coffers are empty and he's going to be looking to tax people more. So let's be realistic about this, because a lot of people listen to the show to try and figure out what might be happening next. And although Tito gave us very few indications of precisely what he meant, I'd like to put your brain's trust to action here and see whether you guys have any idea of what is likely to occur. What do you think they're going to do? Because when governments run out of money, they become very, very dangerous.
I think this goes back to our earlier point about the incompetent mafia running the country. A couple of days back, I live tweeted my sitting on the phone waiting for SARS to actually pick it up. And it finally got picked up after I was sitting on the phone for 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
So, yes. And so I screenshotted the waiting on the SARS phone line every step of the way. The coffers are empty. Look, they can try cranking up tax, but let's look at the reality of stuff that's happening. Now, firstly, based on the fact that of Tito's speech yesterday, how do the markets react? You see, the markets don't give a stuff about the hospital in Tigerberg. What the markets do care about is that Tito actually is clueless and rudderless. And so what happens with the JSE? Down 3.3%. Okay, guys, can we put that in perspective? All right. Down 3.3%.
I just want to throw something in here. And Ivo, you know something about this too. There have been no new listings on the JSE for some time. No new listings.
Yes, one of the reasons for that is
the people who have delisted.
Yeah.
Yes, the requirements for listing on the JSE are now so onerous that people just don't have an incentive in terms of going in that direction anymore. Besides, remember the reason why people get onto a stock market in the first place is generally so that they can have an IPO, so that they can actually then get an injection of public funding. When the public coffers have already been looted, what is the incentive for people to go onto the JSE in terms of actually raising money? But, you know, consider Anglo was down 5.1%. BHP was down 3.2%. You know, literally the biggest drags on the market. Now ask yourself, which of the sectors on the JSE are going to provide growth in the next 6 months leading up to the next budget, at which point Tito hopes to raise taxes? Well, if he's going to raise taxes, there's going to be even more of a capital flight.
I mean, well, that's the problem. I mean, you're not going to list on the JSE if you're not sure that you can actually place your listing, that you can actually place your shares, right? Which means you need people who are willing to invest, willing to invest in South Africa, willing to invest in your business, et cetera, or your business sector. Who at the moment in their right mind would invest money in South Africa and in South African business? Right. And what sort of business would you invest in? The only one I can think of, perhaps, is construction businesses, because, you know, someone's got to build those 12 damn harbors. You know, but
you love these harbors as much as Cyril does.
I think harbors are awesome. I want a harbor too. You know, I got a little cocaine business on the side that I need infrastructure for.
But remember as well that construction in our country is the equivalent of the defense industry in the US. It's where you find the biggest sources of corruption in terms of public funds.
Absolutely. It is the single biggest corrupt industry in the country. Partially because so much construction is government funded, which means there's all sorts of scope for kickbacks and this and that. You know, bringing on partners that don't deliver anything, but, you know, hey, somebody's cousin, so, you know, they need to get a cut. But, you know, in general, why would you want to invest in South Africa? You have to pay over so much for black empowerment fees. You have to pay over so much for you know, taxes. Then you get told you're going to be taxed more next year, but we don't know how much. You know, everyone worries that company taxes are going to go up. They're already pretty high in this country. And where is the economic, where is the growth coming from that you know, in this country? So why would you invest in this country? Why would you, you know, buy shares on the JSE? Funny enough, the one thing that would boost the JSE is if the government finally realizes that, look, debt and taxes aren't going to be enough to fund all of this wish list, this balanced budget that Mboweni is promising and frankly is not in any way obliged to achieve. If once the debt and the taxes run out, and I don't think he can raise that much more tax because there's just not the economy to base it on. Then he needs to start printing money. Right? Then we need to start talking about quantitative easing. And that's when, Mboweni mentioned Zimbabwe yesterday. That's when we're heading in Zimbabwe's direction. Once we start printing money, and that money goes to the banks. So to increase lending, that means it goes to rich people and big companies, which means it ends up in asset bubbles like the stock market and property and so on. And that's frankly why in the US and in Europe, stock markets have done very well throughout this pandemic. Right? You'd think that they'd crash, given the circumstances, but they don't. And that's simply because if you print $4 trillion and you pump that into the top end of the banking sector, it's all going to end up in, land, property, assets, like shares and so on. So that's the only reason you might want to invest in the South African stock market is if you think that the Reserve Bank is going to start printing money.
I just want to say, you say who would want to invest in this country? And I just saw a message from one of the people listening that actually the people who should want to invest in this country should be all of us. We should be wanting to invest our knowledge, our work ethic, our power, and we have to stop looking to the government to be the savior. We have to do a little bit of work too. Somebody was saying they don't know how to be positive. You mentioned if we start printing money, we're going to go down the way of Zimbabwe. If we do what Zimbabweans did, if we disinvest our interest in this country and walk away from this country, of course we're going to go down. We're all going to go down. So we should be investing our interest. We should be investing our time. We should be investing our minds in building our country and stop waiting for the government. We just have to we have to disinvest our time from the government. The government's not going to save us, guys. We must save ourselves.
I agree completely with Pumi, Ivo. And, just one point I'd like to make at that level. The way in which we invest in our country right now is we cut our ties with government at every conceivable level. So you go off grid in terms of electricity, go off grid in terms of your water supply, as far as possible, avoid anything that's going to feed revenue into the coffers of the state. And then you batten down the hatches and wait for them to completely collapse. And then you emerge in kind of an Atlas Shrugged mode where you then take control of your country again.
That's fine.
I'm gonna go and start a little tourism business, right, or a restaurant or something, because, we need some and a whole bunch of them have closed. So there's a big gap in the market. Mm-hmm. But then we go back to what Zweli Mkhize said. He wants, after the state of disaster is finished, he wants the right to be able to lock down the country, right? And under the health act, the National Health Act, he wants to close businesses, impose curfews, restrict the free movement of citizens at will, to control the spread of notifiable medical conditions. Right? So he wants that power all by himself, just to make these regulations and to promulgate them, and so on. No parliament necessary. Nothing the opposition can do. So I'm going to start a restaurant. So now I'm going to go to a bank. I want a loan, right? Bank says, okay, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'm going to start a restaurant. Bank says, well, that's usually a bad idea, but what do your business plan look like? How much money are you going to make? I said, no, I can make money every month and I'll pay you back.
Except
when Zweli Mkhize next year decides there is some sort of disease around that requires him to close restaurants. Right? And suddenly I can't sell alcohol, I've got to close my restaurant at 6 p.m., and I can't make money, and I can't pay the bank back. Which bank is going to lend me money to start my restaurant? Which investor is going to invest in my restaurant?
No, Ivo, it doesn't have to be that. All you have to do, Ivo, is you need to join my church. And, you know, we hold church gatherings at various places around the country. It just so happens that we serve food and we serve alcohol at these church gatherings. Yes. Join my church.
Okay. The Church of Jack Daniel. Yeah.
Guys, by the way, we've got 4 minutes left, and I just want to get something on the table for the record. Yeah. Given that by the time we meet next week, the U.S. election will be over.
Correct.
And once again, I'm sticking my neck out. I am saying that the polls are going to be completely wrong, and Trump is actually going to walk this.
Well, Ivo, you haven't had a say on this yet, so what do you say? And then Pumi, I'd like to hear from you.
Well, I'm just very disappointed that the Americans will never vote for a third candidate when the first two choices are so obviously so deficient. I strongly dislike Trump, and I think he's dangerous in many ways. There's one or two policies of his that I agree with. You know, I'm against regulation, so I quite like the fact that he's taking a hatchet to the regulatory agencies. But in general, I think he's a buffoon and he's dangerous. Biden is equally useless. You know, he's a socialist, and his deputy is even more left-wing than he is. So, you know, he is totally uninspiring. The Libertarians have put up a candidate, Jo Jorgensen, and nobody's ever heard of her, and nobody ever will. One of the reasons is actually because what they need is they need ranked voting, right? And this is your big problem with third-party candidates. If I have a choice between Biden and Trump, and I say, okay, well, I'm going to go with Biden or whatever. But now I vote for a third-party candidate because I don't like either of the main party choices, then I risk that the candidate that I least favor ends up winning because I split the vote. Right. So what you need to do is you need to be able to say, right, first choice is Joe Jorgensen. If Joe Jorgensen doesn't get a majority, then I would like Biden. Right. And that sort of system would prevent the problem of splitting a vote. You know, like what you saw with Nader and the Democrats.
That sort of system, Ivo, would only work when you have a popular vote as the deciding factor. The American electoral system does not work like that because of the college.
No, so, a few states are actually introducing it this year. They are actually introducing ranked voting. I think Massachusetts is one of them. So I'm very interested to see how that goes. Look, it only works in first-past-the-post systems. I can't figure out how that would work in our sort of system, which is proportional representation.
Yeah.
But it's something that I think the Americans really need to think about. Because every now and again, a third-party candidate pops up.
I'm concerned about
that. Yeah, but I agree with you completely, but it's not going to happen in the next 20 years. So, you know, but it's a pipe dream. Let's just park it. Yeah.
All right. What
I'm hoping is that Trump wins, because then the stock market is going to do another jump, and whatever money I have now taken out from the JSE and put very firmly into U.S. stocks is going to perform significantly better.
All right.
And Nicholas Bauer will retire from journalism.
Oh, is that what did he promise? Because that would be so great. Pumi, what do you say?
He promised if Trump wins, he's retiring from journalism. So you now have to support Trump, don't you?
Yeah.
I'm sad to say that I do think that Donald Trump is going to win. I'm sad to say, and it's simply because of the way that the system in America is stacked.
Can I tell you what I'm concerned
about? However,
I'm...
I do think that we, Gareth, before you go, but I do think that one of the things that we are going to have to talk about one of these days on this burning platform, because it's going to be a factor in the 2024 election in South Africa too, as we have now a constitutional court ruling that says a third party candidate, and yet we have proportional representation, and that's independent.
Pumi, you bring that up the last minute, literally with 30 seconds left on the clock.
I will talk about it post the Donald Trump win, the Trump train in that station, and all the shouting. When it's all over, but the shouting, we'll have that conversation next week. I think it's an important one.
Whoever wins has to win by a significant margin, because if they don't, this is going to drag on for months and possibly years, and presidents will be called illegitimate by the other side, and it's going to lead to increased instability, and that's not good for the whole world. And let's all just remember that as awful as some people seem to think America is, if China becomes the new world hegemon, I think then we've got serious things to worry about. And suddenly it won't be about trans bathrooms. It'll be about actual human rights. And I think that that's something to consider very seriously as we watch the Americans decide their fate this coming week. Good luck to everybody.
The empire is falling.
Yes, and it's not a good thing, believe me, for all of us in Western liberal democracies, which is not the default setting for humankind, by the way. We should all be very grateful that we live in a time where there is as much.
And they're under threat. So I agree with you. You know, America, for all its faults, is still a sort of a beacon for liberal democracy. And that's really the form of government that we all should be supporting.
Well, don't take Ivo and my word for it. Just watch where migration happens. People are giving up everything that they have, little as it may be in some places, to get to America. No one is rushing out of America to get to somewhere else. And that is all you need to know.
Correct.
Thank you. All right, everybody. Have a happy day. The Burning Platform is brought to you every week by Nando's. Thank you, Pumelele. Thank you very much, Canton. And our special guest this morning, Ivo Vechter. We will join you next week, and hopefully you will join us for another excellent episode. And man, will we have a lot more to talk about. Always a clanger from Pumi in the last 30 seconds of the show. Every week. It's never a dull moment.
All right. Take my name through the mud here in the last minute. Yay!
You leave a little clip every week, so we'll get to that next week. And I know that there were lots of emails, too, for Canton. Plenty of comments that we didn't get to today. Forgive me. We'll pick up on all of those next week, too. CliffCentral.com